When it comes to policies that prevent and reduce cancer, Wisconsin received mixed review in a recent report by the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 11th. We will talk with two experts about the report. This hour, we will review the scorecard and talk about recommendations for improvement. And we'll welcome your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Sarah Sawley, Wisconsin Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Dr. Alex Adams, Professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health, Director of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Adams.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Well, let's start first with an overview of the findings of this report. Sarah, what does it mean that Wisconsin got mixed reviews?
Well, what it means is if you look at the report, we sort of look at 9 different areas and rate them green, yellow, or red. Green means that we are represent the goal or the position that we've adopted evidence-based policies and good practices. Yellow indicates movement towards that goal, and then red shows that we have some work to do on those things. And so the green areas for Wisconsin, we do really well on our cigarette tax. We're well above the national average. Our smoke-free air law is also something that we're very proud of and get a green score on. And then our pain policy, which makes it easier for doctors to prescribe pain medications to those that need it, those facing cancer or, you know, anything that the pain is associated with that, while balancing, this idea that sometimes these are the same drugs that are used and abused.
So those three areas, the cigarette tax, our smoke-free air, and pain medication policies, we get the green light or the we're doing okay in those policies according to the report, but all other areas, 6 different areas, we are not doing all right.
Right. There are 3 in the yellow, Medicaid coverage for cessation products, our tanning law, and our breast and cervical cancer funding. We are in the yellow category. And then the red category, we don't do so well in our tobacco prevention and control program funding, our access to Medicaid, and then something called palliative care or quality of life.
All right. I'm sorry. I missed the first red one.
Oh, sure. It's the tobacco prevention and control program funding. This funding is currently $5.4 million annually. That is only 9% of what the CDC recommends for that program.
Yeah. All right. So some work to do. Was this a nationwide study? Are we compared to other states?
We are. It's all 50 states in the report, and it's annually. And we are, they release these findings in a report that shows where other states are. And I would say that we are about average. There are some states obviously doing better and obviously some that fall even further below Wisconsin.
Yeah, so the report then gives us this scorecard and then has recommendations that we should be passing anti-cancer laws and policies along these lines.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, Dr. Adams, from a physician's perspective, is this report, generally good news or bad news when it comes to fighting cancer in Wisconsin?
Well, obviously, in the middle of the packet, there's some good news there, but I think there's always improvement we can make in prevention. It's really important to fund prevention programs because cancer is much easier to deal with if you prevent it than if you're having to treat it. And the burden of disease is reduced, and, of course, expenditure across the state would be reduced greatly, and people would generally not suffer as much.
And the areas that you are, I mean, you're, I'm sure concerned about all of the areas, but in particular, you're looking at the childhood obesity prevention?
Right. So in particular, our initiative that's a statewide initiative with multiple public and private partners has really been dedicating ourselves to promoting healthy lifestyles, particularly working on improving physical activity in multiple settings and healthy eating, and looking at policy system and environment changes that we can work on together to improve health in our state.
Yeah. So what would some of those be?
Well, for example, in the early childhood arena, we've worked hard to try and improve physical activity in child care settings, and had some really good experience with improving children's just daily activity in that setting, which seems like it should be a regularly active setting, but it really wasn't. And so we've been very encouraged by those results.
Yeah. There's also a proposal to require or increase physical education classes in our schools.
That is extremely important. We're the only state in the nation that does daily physical activity is Illinois, just south of us. And we really feel, especially as a physician, I feel that daily physical activity is super important to health. I have so many kids that come into my office that really aren't able to get physical activity outside the home due to safety issues or parent scheduling issues or other kinds of concerns, and really need that daily physical activity in schools. It not only promotes physical health, but also mental health. Kids actually do better in school if they're able to be active every day. And it also prevents disease in the future.
Yeah, so what is the link between obesity and cancer?
Well, there's multiple theories about different links, but one of the thoughts is that it's an inflammation link. So if we have, if we're overweight or obese, particularly central obesity, that causes kind of an inflammatory state in our body. That's sort of like having a chronic infection, and that can lead to an increase in cancers. So cancers, about a third of all cancer cases are directly related to obesity, decreased physical activity, and poor diet.
Yeah. So Sarah, what is the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network going to do with, for example, the results on our yellow light and green light red light areas?
Well, I'll actually back up and add to what Dr. Adams said in terms of obesity and poor nutrition. The American Cancer Society in 2009 found that there is definite link between nutrition and poor physical inactivity and cancer. And in fact, the scary statistic is showing that within the next 10 or 15 years, it threatens to overtake tobacco as the leading cause of cancer. And so that's very, very concerning. And so, we are looking at a bill here in the state. Right now, our elementary students are only required to participate in physical education 3 days a week with no specified time. And one of the things that we're looking at to improve sort of our score would be to ask that they just add two more days and make sure that each of those days is 30 minutes of physical education for these students.
And so tell me that you're asking for 5 days a week then?
Oh. That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so is there legislative support for this?
There is, actually. So we know that policy takes time. So last session we had a bill, and it had a committee hearing, and there was wonderful discussion, bipartisan support, lots of questions, and lawmakers know that we need to do something about this statistic of 1 in 3 of our Wisconsin children are obese or overweight. This year we've reintroduced that. In fact, we just had over 100 volunteers this last spring at the Capitol asking for support on a bill that Representative Stephan out of Green Bay has introduced. And we currently have 17, right around 17 co-sponsors. 9 of them are Republicans, 8 are Democrats. We anticipated that it wouldn't really make a lot of progress during the budget cycle, but we do anticipate that it will be back and up for a hearing and public input probably this fall.
We are talking with Sarah Sawley. She is Wisconsin Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, and Dr. Alex Adams, who is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health Dr. Adams, also the director of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, both talking with us about this new report where Wisconsin gets mixed reviews on cancer-fighting public policies. One of the areas has to do with physical education in the schools, talking about increasing the amount of physical education in our public schools from 3 days a week to 5 days a week. What do you think of that? And what other questions do you have about Wisconsin's preventive health policies? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Wisconsin gets mixed reviews in a report by the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network when it comes to anti-cancer policies. We are discussing the report and its recommendations with two guests, and we are welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. In the report, How Do You Measure Up? A progress report on state legislative activity to reduce cancer incidence and mortality. Wisconsin falls behind other states in many of the issue areas that are ranked, from funding for tobacco prevention and cessation programs to recommended requirements for physical education in schools and more. And we are talking about these areas and wonder what you think Wisconsin lawmakers or policymakers should do to better prevent cancer. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Sarah Sawley, who is Wisconsin Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and Dr. Alex Adams, who is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. She's also director of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So let's talk a little bit about some of these other areas get a few more specifics. Sarah Sawley, when it comes to funding for tobacco prevention and cessation programs, how come we've got a big red light in Wisconsin regarding that?
So the way that we generate the red for us in this is that we look at the national recommendations on funding for our state from the CDC. And currently we are only at about 9% of that. We fund our that program at $5.4 million a year. It's a program obviously designed to help with cessation efforts and education efforts across the state. And, you know, we've got a little bit of work to do to get that up to, you know, the recommended levels. I think when I first started here, we were right around $15 million, and that was in 2006. So we've seen a decrease in that program over the last few years.
Yeah, and what does that fund?
Well, so what, you know, obviously one of the things I mentioned was the cessation efforts.
Yeah, what is that?
So if the quit line, for example, if someone wanted some support to you know, try to kick the habit of smoking, that quit line is there and available. And what we're seeing is that the quit line cannot meet the demands. I think originally at one point when we were funded at a little higher rate, you know, the statistics were showing things like folks were able to get two callbacks. But at this point, I believe that there might be one callback available because of the funding. The other thing that it funds is education efforts in the community. The unfortunate thing is that people think that we've made so much progress in tobacco that we don't really, you know, everyone knows tobacco is bad and everyone knows that the risk factors are there. But what's happening is because of our higher tobacco tax and because of our statewide smoke-free air law, Those rates are going down in terms of traditional cigarettes, but what's happening is the tobacco industry is trying to find a new market, and they're putting things out that are definitely geared toward a whole new generation of addicts. Candy-flavored tobacco products that come in, you know, packages that look very similar to candy or very similar to lip gloss or breath mints, gum in some cases. And so there's a lot of work to do with parents and with students themselves and frankly, the community in terms of these new products and making them aware of them. And the other issue that's coming up that's a relatively new product from the tobacco industry are these electronic cigarettes.
Yeah, and the electronic cigarettes are nicotine, but are they? Is there a link between e-cigarettes and cancer?
Well, there's definitely, you know, nicotine is an addictive substance, and you know, there is so much to learn on these products. They're, you know, right around 10 years that they've been on the market, and there's so much to learn about what they are, what is in them. There's over, I want to say, over 400 different manufacturers of the juice and numerous manufacturers of the actual device. Many of them come from China. They are wholly unregulated by the FDA at this point. That's one of the federal things that we're tracking is the FDA is set to rule on classifying these, we're hoping, as tobacco products themselves.
Yeah, so what would that accomplish? So they'd be able to regulate it better?
That's correct. They would fall into that category of, you know, the way that they're allowed to advertise and the way that they need to disclose the ingredients on their labeling. Those things are not regulated at this point.
Yeah, so you would like to see in Wisconsin, what would you like to see our state lawmakers do? Ban e-cigarettes for minors, or is that already banned?
Well, so they are already not allowed 18 and under in the state. Unfortunately, you know, what we're seeing is that this is, you know, while our traditional cigarette use for youth, the good news is that has gone down. But in Wisconsin, we're finding that kids will find a way, obviously, to get their hands on these. And we are seeing 75% higher rate of use among teens than nationally. Right around 8% of youth identify as using electronic smoking devices.
Yeah, so is there some sort of policy change that you want or law change that you want when it comes to, you know, candy-flavored cigarette products?
Well, certainly, you know, we look to other states for what they've done. I know Minnesota has just passed that. Actually, Minneapolis just passed that. But, you know, we learn from other states and look at some of the things that they are doing and if, you know, if it's working. And, you know, I think product placement would be a good thing that Wisconsin could look at, put these candy-flavored products behind the counter, make it harder for kids to get these products. And also to make sure, again, that parents are aware of what kind of packaging these devices come in, these products come in, and, you know, to be looking, you know, for these and not just assume it's a lip gloss or assume it's a pack of gum. You know, the other thing we look at is taxing these appropriately. Right now, a product like a little cigar that often comes in candy flavors, packaged just like a cigarette, is at about 62 cents a pack on the tax rate compared to $2.52 when it comes to a pack of traditional cigarettes. And obviously, cheaper price, candy flavor, easier to get, you know, not behind the counter. These all lead to curiosity and potentially a lifelong addiction.
I'm so out of it. So there is a little cigar that is kind of candy flavored that is popular among the young folk?
Absolutely, yes.
And what? So it's like cherry flavored cigar or something like that?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So, Dr. Adams, any thoughts on what Wisconsin should do when it comes to these types of the tobacco products or the e-cigarettes?
So I absolutely agree. I think that we really don't know the ingredients in many of these products. There's a lot of toxins, and even in the vapor. So we need to be much more cautious about them than we've been in the past. And I think they're slipping through the cracks right now. So for our kids' health and for everybody's health, I think they need to be better regulated.
We are talking about what Wisconsin can do better when it comes to cancer prevention policies. 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. There is one more tobacco cessation related area that is in the report where Wisconsin gets a, looks like a yellow light, a Medicaid coverage for tobacco cessation services. Sarah, that means we should be covering more than we are when it comes to Medicaid?
That's correct. The way that we measure this and the way that you would get a green rating in a state is that if you cover all of the drugs in terms of helping someone quit smoking, the patch, you know, the lozenge, that kind of thing, and also offer counseling in a group setting and individually. And I believe, I don't know which one, but Wisconsin doesn't offer one of the counselings, which makes us fall into that yellow category. So, you know, it's not as bad as we think, but we could, you know, improve that by just adding that additional counseling aspect.
Yeah, and we, but as we mentioned earlier, in terms of smoke-free laws and the cigarette tax rates, that Wisconsin is doing comparatively pretty well. And we did just have the 5-year anniversary of the smoke-free air law.
That's correct. We celebrated that at the early part of July. 5 years later, we're finding more support than ever. In 2011, a few years after it was passed, I think the support in a public poll was about 75%, and then we just did another one recently, and it's got an 86% approval rating. People like this. They've come to expect clean indoor air when they go out, and, you know, 86% support is a pretty great number.
Yeah. We do have some callers. Let's go to John in Kenosha first. Hi, John.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for having my phone call. I have a question for both your guests, both Sarah and Alex. It's going to kind of go a little bit in depth, but you know, we're talking about cancer prevention. And I'm just kind of curious because I've done a lot of reading and a lot of studying. I'm curious about why iodine is no longer used for cancer prevention, and I bring this up because pre-1900, it was actually in medical journals that iodine has the ability to reverse precancerous tumors and cystic growths.
I'm wondering if, now, is iodine, is that what's in salt, Dr. Adams?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
Iodine. He says, why is iodine no longer being used to prevent cancer? And I just asked, isn't iodine added to our salt for...
Yes, so we do have iodinated salt. In many countries, there's iodine added to other products as well, breads and flours and things like that. So we effectively have reduced the burden of iodine deficiency in this country greatly with that, but there are still areas and people that still have iodine deficiency issues.
Yeah, so I guess John is, without going, he wanted to go in-depth, and we don't have time to go in-depth. Is this some area that you believe as a physician is, you know, we need to improve upon?
So I think that's more of an individual question. There are certainly patients that I see that have iodine deficiency, and there are plenty of patients we see that are not iodine deficient. It depends on dietary habits and many variables. I think there's definitely a link between, you know, iodine deficiency and multiple diseases. I don't know the data on more recent data on cancer prevention with iodine, but clearly, you know, thyroid cancers are related to iodine.
John, thank you very much for the call. We have Carol on Facebook who says that Wisconsin should encourage regular screenings. Well, I guess she means for all cancer. Dr. Adams, do we do well enough when it comes to encouraging regular screenings?
Well, so I think that we do fairly well with regular screenings, but there are certain parts of the population that are lacking those. And that's where the Wisconsin Well Woman Program has done a really great job providing cancer screenings for women, for breast and cervical cancer detection for uninsured or underinsured women. And so continuing to support programs that work on cancer screening for these kinds of populations are really vital because, you know, obviously early detection can lead to early cure.
Yeah, and that's one of the areas where Wisconsin, in this report, gets a yellow light, Sarah Solly, is breast and cervical cancer early detection funding.
Yes. So again, the way that they rate that is based on the amount of funding we give in comparison to the federal funding. This is a jointly funded program, state and federal. And I believe the yellow falls, anywhere between 33% to 99% of that federal money would give you a yellow. So to reach 100% would be the way to get green. So we are in that, anywhere between 33% and 99% of the federal money in our matching funds. And, this is a program that, is something that we're very proud of. It does a great job with low-income, underinsured, and uninsured women. And actually, this year was one of the few things that did get a funding increase. It started out at annually at $2.2 million, and they added $100,000 to this program. It's a program that, because in Wisconsin, we have an estimated right around 4,000 new breast cancer cases, annually, and about 720 of those, we have those as deaths. And this program between 2009 and 2013 detected 872 incidents of breast and cervical cancer through that program.
Yeah. We have a Pete on Facebook who says, bring back funding for Planned Parenthood. I know that's very political right now, controversial right now, but did Planned Parenthood have funding that provided breast and cervical cancer screenings? Sarah, do you know?
Well, I'm not sure. I know that, a number of years ago they used to do some cessation efforts. We stick with state policy and state programs that fund these. And so, we look and really advocate for this Well Woman program and access to that.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Kenneth in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello, Joy. I was wondering, if you were talking about the spice that they talked about on Point yesterday, and you said they only smoke or spray it on the cigarettes or whatever, but this stuff, it's like a salt that's being brought into this country from China by the ton. I mean, literally by the ton, and they add acetate to it, the fingernail polish remover, and they make it a liquid in cement mixers or whatever, and then they spray it.
Yeah, Kenneth, I'm losing you in because I didn't hear the show, and the spice is synthetic marijuana, and
yeah.
The show On Point was dealing with the issue of synthetic marijuana. What you're telling us is that they spray something on something to make spice, but I don't know about this.
On their cereal or on their bodies or wherever.
I don't know what you're talking about, Kenneth. I'm not sure about spraying stuff on your bodies. But what about spice? That is synthetic marijuana. Dr. Adams, do you have any thoughts on this as a problem, and especially when it comes to cancer?
So I think we really don't have any idea of its relationship to cancer yet, because it's a new product. And it takes, obviously, a decade or more to really show a relationship with cancer usually. We've certainly seen a huge issue with it around the country in terms of just behavioral issues and severe addiction and, policing issues. So I think that it is indeed a huge issue. But I don't know that we can relate it to what we're talking about today.
Yeah, probably not. Do you... Just because I'm so confused, and we have just 30 seconds before news, do you spray this on yourself for any reason?
I have not heard of anybody spraying it on themselves.
Yeah, all right, all right, good. Then I guess, I'm not good, but Kenneth, sorry I didn't quite understand your question, but I hope we touched on it when we talked about spice and cancer. We are talking about cancer policy and what Wisconsin can do to improve its cancer prevention laws and policies. Everything from Medicaid coverage of tobacco cessation services to more funding for breast and cervical cancer for early detection. When we come back from news, we will talk about indoor tanning device restrictions. That's another area where Wisconsin falls short, so we'll hear more about that and take more of your questions at 1-800-642-1234. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When it comes to policies that prevent and reduce cancer, Wisconsin received mixed reviews in a recent report by the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. We are talking about where Wisconsin falls short and how Wisconsin could improve its cancer prevention policies and save lives. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for either of our guests, or you can also send an email, talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Sarah Sawley, Wisconsin Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and Dr. Alex Adams, Professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health, Director of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative at the UW Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. The report finds that lawmakers could save lives with more funding for tobacco cessation, could save lives by better physical education efforts. And there is also a rating here for indoor tanning device restrictions. Wisconsin falls short in this report on those restrictions. And Sarah, I was wondering, what is it? What kind of restrictions do we want for indoor tanning devices?
Sure. So the report would give us a green if we ban tanning for youth under the age of 17. 17 and under banned. Currently, Wisconsin's law is 16 and under. And you know, the one statistic that is a little bit alarming to me is that if you use a tanning bed before the age of 35, your chance of developing melanoma increases by 59%. And so this is, you know, something that we obviously are concerned about and want to continue to, you know, raise awareness and, you know, work to, you know, potentially, you know, eventually work to add that one more year up to 17.
Holy cow. I never really thought that much about it. But it's so you would like to see lawmakers increase it by one more year.
Sure. If it's politically feasible, you know, to work with lawmakers to add that one more year, you know, we may look at that, you know, in the future for Wisconsin.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Dr. Adams?
I think that a lot of people don't really understand the risks of indoor tanning. They think it's important to get sort of a base tan and then they can tan on top of that. Particularly, this is true in young women. About 32% of those ages 18 to 21 are using tanning beds. 13% of all high school students and 21% of all high school girls. So that's a really large proportion of kids that are, you know, doing this kind of thing and not really realizing the risk that they're putting themselves at in future for, you know, three different types of skin cancer. One of them is the most severe, which is melanoma.
Paige on our Facebook page says, encourage people to eat less meat and dairy, or none, and lots of veggies and fruits, as advised by the movie Forks Over Knives. Well, how about our nutrition efforts, Dr. Adams? Is there a link between good nutrition and cancer?
Certainly, there's a very strong link between good nutrition and cancer. We know that, you know, poor nutrition and consumption of the higher calorie foods, especially some of the, what we call the sort of non-nutritive foods, you know, soda, other sugar sweetened beverages, non-plant foods are very unhealthy for people. So obviously consuming a diet that's high in fruits and vegetables, good grains is the most healthy diet that you can have for preventing cancer.
So are there interventions or policies for encouraging healthier eating that we should consider?
Well, so one of the things that Wisconsin is doing in a few of its counties is what we call farm to school, where we work with local farmers, or the school works with local farmers to bring in fresh fruits and vegetables, and of course, making sure that, you know, for kids, the healthy choice is the easy choice. You know, that's one thing that we always say, and educating them on these, you know, the need to, you know, eat fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that.
Yeah. What about, according to the report, roughly one in three Wisconsin third graders are overweight or obese, and the state's obesity rate has more than doubled since 1990. I'm wondering, first with nutrition, then we'll get into some physical activity. Dr. Adams, are school lunches are they better now than they used to be? Or do they need to still be better?
So I would say that's somewhat true. I think we have had some good, significant national changes in legislation over the past 5 years that have improved school lunches. However, there's clearly a long way to go in that because we're still spending way less than we probably need to be in terms of improving school nutrition. And many children are getting breakfast and lunch at school. And, you know, I see a lot of kids in my clinic that are trying to deal with these issues, and they're having to get a lot of their nutrition from school programs. So the healthier that we can make these, and more we can introduce farm to school to get more fruits and vegetables into these lunches and breakfasts, then the better off our kids are going to be.
We are talking with Dr. Alex Adams and Sarah Sawley about the new report, How Do You Measure Up? A Progress Report on State Legislative Activity to Reduce Cancer Incidence and Mortality. And we're asking you that question, too. How do you think Wisconsin's preventive health policy is when it comes to fighting cancer? Are there areas where you think the state can improve? What types of legislation would you like to see passed to reduce the incidence of cancer? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I know that, Sarah, you wanted to talk a little bit more about the importance of physical activity and this bill that would increase physical education in the schools?
That's correct. You know, what I'll say is this, is that, as I mentioned last session when we first introduced this concept, you know, there was a lot of bipartisan support in terms of, you know, having the conversation that we know that some interventions need to be taken, and we would, you know, love it if Wisconsin would start to see the need to increase from 3 days a week, which they currently are required, to 5 days a week to help improve, you know, these lifelong skills and habits that these kids can take with them and reverse that 1 in 3, you know, youth in this state are overweight or obese.
Yeah. So, what about those of us, Dr. Adams, who are out of grade school?
Well, we know that.
Uh-oh, did we lose Dr. Adams? Maybe we did. How about Sarah? Did we lose you?
No, I'm still here.
All right. So I don't know what happened there, but is there something that we can do to encourage adults to be more physically active?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we can always, you know, talk about this link. I think when we talk to other staff members in the building here and out in the community and talk about this idea that, you know, the obesity and poor nutrition threatens to overtake tobacco as the number one cause of cancer, I think it's relatively alarming to start to compare that it's, you know, creeping up, you know, and threatens to overtake tobacco as a leading cause of cancer. And so, you know, I think the more that we can educate and inform and make people aware of this definite connection and risk factor, you know, that they will start to see this as a need to make healthier choices.
Yeah. Oh, and we have Dr. Adams back. Just a little glitch on the telephone line for some reason. So, Dr. Adams, what about adults and physical activity?
Right. So I think it's equally important for adults, where all of us are supposed to be engaging about 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity activity each week. And that can be done in small 10-minute bouts several times a day or 30 minutes a day. And adolescents and children should have about an hour a day, which is, you know, in our very high screen society is very difficult. So I think we need to all pay attention to this, and we need to make, again, the healthy choice, the easy choice. One of the ways to do that is to engineer physical activity into our day, you know, more walking to work, more biking to work, and for kids, getting that activity either to and from school as well as during school time is really critical.
Kim in Madison is with us. Hi, Kim.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, if the question was what kind of legislation do you want to see, and I don't want to see any, so
but I do definitely want to bring back recess. I think that's something that's really been cut out of elementary and middle school. By the time they get to high school, they don't have room for them in the cafeteria, so they give them open lunch. But by that time, kids aren't used to running around and playing or going for walks or doing anything physical. They just walk down to Hardee's or Taco Bell.
Yeah. Have we lost recess, Dr. Adams or Sarah Solly?
Yeah, I think, well, we definitely have. The recess is way down, and most middle schools are almost no recess now. And this is a huge issue, not only for physical activity, because, again, kids aren't learning to be active with each other, but also just for stress management. These are kids that really need to be active and to be just to be healthy. They need to be beyond being outside.
And no Taco Bell, right?
And no Taco Bell, yes.
And I'll also say, you know, there's also a distinction that should be made, that recess is very important, but it shouldn't replace physical education. Physical education is it's a classroom setting where they're learning lifelong skills, you know, something that we used to have daily in the 80s. We're just looking to, again, add those two more days, and of course recess would be a great complement for physical activity. You know, as Dr. Adams mentioned, 1 hour a day for kids is recommended, and if we could make sure that 30 minutes of that is physical education and then the other portion of that is physical activity through recess or through classroom breaks or something like that, but certainly physical education and physical activity, there is a distinct difference.
Boy, really a wide-ranging hour of issues that we're almost completely out of time, but Sarah Solly, what is the takeaway? What do you hope happens because of this report?
Well, what I hope happens is that we can make, you know, some of those small little improvements to move us from yellow to green. And, you know, the one piece that we're looking at right now is this physical education. I think it's a necessary piece to start to reverse some of these trends and cancer incidents.
In less than 30 seconds, Dr. Adams?
I completely agree. I think for kids really need to be active, and this is a great way to get that happening, particularly for kids that really can't get to after-school programs.
Excellent. Thank you both very much for being with us. Sarah Solly is with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and Dr. Alex Adams is professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. She is also the director of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative. Thanks to Marika Suval, to Elizabeth Eliquest, and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.